friends. It's that time again. Time to find your balls. It's Jeff Stuckey in the shotgun position. May or may not have been drinking since noon. Greg Allen, got your hands on the wheel.
My hands are on the wheel.
Hopefully you have not been drinking since noon.
I have not.
Good.
Drinking since noon of 1991.
Oh, that's right. So. How's that working for you?
It's working
good. That's rhetorical. Anyway, there was that bourbon ball incident. Should we talk about the bourbon ball incident? Technically, that's a relapse.
Right.
You should go back to meeting one.
Okay, so that's got to start over at the bourbon ball.
We'll talk about that next year.
Okay, but you have something to talk about.
Kind of, yeah. I got a little Christmas rant, if you don't mind indulging me.
No.
So I am not a religious person. I am what you religious people call a heathen. And so, you know, people approach Christmas from different perspectives. There's the people that look at it as the birth of Jesus Christ, which that's wonderful. Celebrate that. And then there's the people that do the whole Santa Claus thing, right? And like, here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus. I shouldn't ever try to sing, but anyway. But there is a much more important sociological aspect of holidays in general, but Christmas specifically, right? So you think about our strongest impulse is to survive. Mm-hmm. And so everything that drives us is approach avoid, right? Approach that to sustain life, avoid that so that life is not terminated. And so given that, we're hardwired with this, what's called the negativity bias, right? Because you only get to die once, right? Yeah. Once you're fucking dead, you're fucking dead, right? So you've got this negativity bias to assume the worst. So we're more inclined to avoid than approach. And so what dictates the approach aspect of that is largely the familiar, right? So why is that important, right? So we're coming out of this unprecedented time in our society of being quarantined, of wearing face masks, right? So we've been very disconnected from each other. And as a result, right, then what becomes most significant is that negativity bias, assume the worst. Mm-hmm. That's going to hurt you. That's going to hurt. Avoid, avoid, avoid. So then when you think about the sociological value of a holiday, right, like goodwill towards men, cheer, those kinds of things, what holidays do sociologically is kind of a reset to say it's safe for us to approach each other. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so incredibly important during this holiday season in particular. It's always important, but specifically during this one. Like, if somebody says Merry Christmas, they're not fucking violating your civil liberties. They're just right. being nice.
Right.
So say Merry Christmas or whatever the kind gesture is, it's so imperative that we respond in kind, that it's safe to approach, so that our social fabric does not continue to unwind to a point that there's no social fabric left.
Right,
so
right.
Try to set your religious views aside, try to set your political views aside, whatever the fuck, man, just be happy. And I'm Eeyore, man. I am the Grinch and I'm out there trying to spread some Christmas cheer. So join the fight with me and Merry fucking Christmas.
Happy holidays, people.
How was that Christmas rant?
That was good.
It was good.
You didn't get to yelling about stuff, you know.
Because I can lose my shit on that.
I know. You did well.
And I'm a team player, and I'm not a team player, man. I'm like, why bother?
Yeah.
Everything's doomed. So anyway, we have a guest today, and I don't get excited about much, but I am excited about our guest today, even though we've never met. right?
Correct.
I mean, our relationship's about 10 minutes old.
If that.
Yeah. How's it going so far? He's like, what the fuck did I sign up for? But you and I have a mutual friend who I think I can safely say we both hold in very high regard.
Facts.
And so one of the things that we, that man made is acutely interested in is the transformation of men, of becoming better men. And so he's told me a few details about your story. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, I need to hear that story. And you graciously accepted our invitation. And we are just ecstatic to have you here. Really appreciate it.
Glad you guys offered me to come on.
Yeah. So I don't ever do this, but I'm going to shut the fuck up.
This will just be a few seconds here.
I can imagine.
So it could be. It could go longer than that. And I just, man, we just love to hear your story.
And if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself first and then tell us a little bit about your background.
Dontell Keys, this guy needed a BBC here, big bike Christian for those potty mind people out there. I'm moved here recently from Indianapolis, by the way, East St. Louis. It's been a blessing since I've been here. Come from humble beginnings, humble means. Recently served 25 years in prison, murder, carjacking, criminal confinement, robbery, kidnapping. You know, you can just imagine. I went to prison when I was ripe age of 18. So when I got out, a 40-year-old man.
So what's the backstory, man? There, take us back to the beginning, if you don't mind.
The backstory is I grew up in a drug-infested home, drug-infested environment. My father was serving 30 years in federal penitentiary for selling drugs out of a church. My dad was actually a pastor. So early on, I had a skewed vision of the church, a skewed vision of faith.
So is there a point in time where, I mean, initially, that's just your normal, right? That's just normal. Like, when do you realize this ain't fucking normal? Like, this
you,
is...
I mean, for the most part, if you're living some day-to-day, it is the norm. You don't know that it's not the norm until you are introduced or invited into something different. So for me, life for me was day-to-day, you know, gangbanging, shooting, selling drugs. Those things were what we did in my environment. And you know, and... I'm the type of person I want to be the best at whatever I'm doing. So I tried to be the best gangbanger, the best drug dealer. And that's what I did. And it landed me in prison for 25 years.
And so that in your development, that was just kind of that was the norm. This is what I do. I move into gangbanging. This is what's the progression of that?
So you don't really see there's. No doctor down the street from you. There's no lawyer who's your neighbor. You know, the guy next door from you is, you know, he's probably a fellow gangbanger. You know, he's probably with you stealing out of the grocery store because you guys don't have any food. Probably, you know, on the pole with you stealing lights and cable from your neighbor because you guys don't have lights. So those are the things that you see, and that's your day-to-day life. You know, I can remember times where we had a church that was next door to us, and, you know, my mom, she spent majority of my life on drugs, and so I used to have to go jump into the trash can of the church after their bread sales and steal bread out of the trash can just so me and my brothers and sisters would have something to eat. So that was our life, you know. That's all we knew.
And you're too busy surviving to know if this is normal, not normal, right, wrong, any of that. It's just...
I mean, it's not only about survival, there's no role models. So if there's nobody, if you don't see the good side of life, and you know, we live in a time now where social media is prevalent. everyone has social media. You can look on to see somebody, you know, living a fantastic life. I'm like, oh, I want that. But, you know, during my time, there was no social media. There was no one that you can look up to and say, hey, man, I want to be like that person. You know, the only thing we knew was Pookie and Ray Ray on the block. And those were the guys we were looking up to. And those, that's what we wanted to be like.
And that was your only option. That was just like, they're surviving. So,
and it's not that that was my only option, because I played football and, you know, and I was pretty good, and I probably could have had a pretty good career in football, but
because you're fucking huge, dude. What's it like to be huge? We'll get back to that anyway. Okay. Keep back to football.
Yeah, it's just like it's like a hopeless environment. So I just went back. My auntie just died here this past week, and I went back to be with family, and I just looked around my city. And it's a hopeless and desolate place. And, you know, and that's what I just think to myself, that's the environment I grew up in. And, you know, this is what my nephews and nieces are growing up in. And it's a good chance they're not going to turn out so well.
So you're playing football. Is that like an awareness that I could potentially be successful at this? Or is it just like, I'm just playing football?
It was just something to do, you know, you get a little bit of recognition from that, especially when you come from an environment where there's really been no love, there's really been no encouragement. Here it is, you got a coach, coaches telling you, hey man, you're good, great job, you know, we love you. You know, when you haven't had that at home, like, it's like, man, I want to go out here and knock this guy out, because, you know, my coach is going to tell me he loves me, and that's kind of the thing.
So it's the validation and the exactly. That's more the – oh, okay. So what, okay, preacher, drug dealer, dad?
Yes. So my dad served 30 years in the federal penitentiary. He's he got caught in a drug trafficking scheme with the mayor of East St. Louis, a corps officer. My dad, he's actually out now. We really don't have a relationship.
Did you before he went into prison or you?
Nah, he was a piece of crap.
Okay.
That's so simple.
Kind of sound like to that.
But can't add to that. Yeah.
So you, what age were you when he went into prison?
I was 14, 12 or 14 when my dad went into prison.
And what was your relationship with him like before that?
So my dad was a preacher. He had a radio station. It was called The Street Preacher. And so one night I told my mom, I don't want to live with you no more. I was tired of living, you know, the way we were living. She say, so, well, I'm going to call your daddy. She called him up on the radio live air, and she was like, your son want to come live with you.
That was on the air?
Yeah, live air.
That's fucking fantastic.
And he told her, I don't have a son. And so that was it for me and my dad's relationship.
Yeah.
And what were you – did you know him prior to that?
Yeah, I knew my dad.
There was some familiarity there?
Yeah, because my dad's mom – she was a really good grandmother, and she made sure that I knew that side of the family. I just didn't have any relationships with my dad.
So, like, what? How are you managing these things? Like,
as an adult now, or as a child?
As a child, like.
I mean, as a child, there's.
I mean, do you feel lonely? Do you feel stressed? Do you feel?
I can't say you feel lonely or stressed. It was just a way of life. You know, most of the kids in my neighborhood didn't have their dad, so why should I have mine? You know, that's one of the, you know, problems, and especially most definitely in the black community, but that there's a lack of fathers, and that's what I witnessed, and so it was the way of life.
So 18 years old, you end up in prison.
Yes.
How did
It was horrible.
What got you in prison?
it was horrible. Like, 18 years old, and I was in prison. I'm originally from East St. Louis. I caught my case in Indianapolis. I was in Michigan City, and so I'm in Indiana, you know, and I don't know anyone. I'm out of state. No family's close. So it was just me amongst a whole bunch of, you know, lifers, you know, people who've been in prison for murder, and as an 18-year-old kid, you have to fend for yourself, you know, and it was a rough way to go starting out.
So at 18, like, what, I can't fucking fathom what that's like at 18 years old. I mean, I could barely wipe properly at 18 years old. So you're confronted with that situation. Like, what, how do you cope with that?
I mean, it's either, what I learned early on in prisons, it's either you adapt to the environment or you become prey to the environment. Early on, I can remember, and I still got the battle wounds to prove it. When I first got to prison, a guy came to me and told me that I was talking too much. I hadn't said nothing, but he told me I was talking too much. But I've always been a fighter, so I beat him up. 2 days later, he came back and while I was asleep, broke. I still got the plates in both sides of my jaw that you can feel. He broke my jaw in two places with a lock and a sock while I was asleep. Yeah. And that was my invitation. That was my first week in prison.
Oh, wow.
Okay, like, and then what? Yeah, man. I'm like,
yeah, well, yeah.
So then, how do you adapt to survive to that?
I mean, you keep pushing. I mean, it wasn't like I could just lay down after that. I couldn't just lay down, you know. After that, but the situation did two things.
Like, do you get medical care, or is it just
I got pins. I had to go to the hospital. I got pins in my jaw right now. I got medical care, but the thing that did for me, it let the other guys know that I am willing to fight, you know, and that I can take a punch because while I was asleep, I woke up and beat him up again. So it was just.
With a broken jaw.
With a broken jaw. I didn't even know my jaw was broken. What was so crazy? Once it happened, I beat him up. They pulled him off. And I couldn't. My tongue was feeling funny, like I couldn't feel my bottom teeth. So I told my neighbor across from me. I say, man, I can't feel my bottom teeth, man. Something wrong with my mouth. He's like, yeah, your jaw's broken. So I went and told the guards that I slipped and fell in the shower, broke my jaw, and you know they took me to medical, and that was that.
So guards don't intervene with that sort of thing. They didn't know about it.
They didn't know about it. Only way they would intervene if I would have. Told them what happened, but and if they see it, they'll intervene. But for the most part, they, you know, it's a free fall.
So many fucking questions. Like, okay, so you did 22 years of that.
Yeah.
That like rinse and repeat. Like, was that?
It wasn't rinse
daily,
it wasn't rinse and repeat.
Like, you eventually establish a reputation, or like, yes. Don't fuck with me.
Yes, I mean, once
he's so fucking nice, man. This is where it's such a mind fuck because it's like, keep going. Like,
yeah. So once I got a foothold, you know, I became, you know, for lack of better words, somebody in prison you didn't want to mess with. You know, if anything happened in the prison, either I made it happen, I knew it was going to happen. I was a person that the guards came to and to ask to calm things down, to make sure things wouldn't happen, or to make sure that everybody was straight, they would bring me certain things inside the prison.
So how do you achieve that status in prison?
I mean, I don't know. I
just beat people up, or like,
I did beat a lot of people up, but that's...
I mean, is that like, hopefully I'll never need this information, but yeah, it's like,
you don't.
Like, that's okay. That's,
yeah. I mean, it's a demeanor, a mindset that you have to have while in there, that, you know, and I just told myself that I was going to be the vicious of the vicious. You know, I controlled, not only my gang, but every other gang inside of the prison, no matter, they was, the Aaron Brotherhood, the SKs, everybody that did anything inside of prison had to go through me.
I mean, that's like hardcore stuff, right? You're talking about living, dying kind of stuff?
Yeah, it's living, dying. It's, yeah.
What the hell happened to you, man? Like, what? How did you become this person?
God.
Give me the long version, please. Like, every detail.
During my prison stay, I continue to be.
So you're one of the most powerful people in the prison. Is that a fair?
That is a fair assumption. Other than, I mean, at the end of the day, the guards hold the power. But as far as inmates, yes. Just to be honest, yes.
Okay. So then keep going.
So, doing my prison stay, you know, I continued to, basically be a knucklehead, control the prison. So they got to the point where they got tired of me controlling the prison. So they started shipping me to different prisons. But no matter what prison I went to, it would be word that I was coming, and I would get that prison in order.
So your reputation was kind of already established?
Oh, yeah.
Or would
they knew I was coming. Yeah, they knew I was coming.
Okay.
Yeah, they knew I was coming. And so they started shipping me from this prison to this prison to finally the prison got tired of me and sent me to a prison for prisoners. It's called the SHU. It's probably the worst place you can ever go. It's a 23-hour lockdown. Only way I was able to leave my cell, I had to be shackled, feet and hands, and they would put a dog leash around my back. So if I did anything, they can just snatch this leash, and I would fall on my face. They fed me this thing called a loaf. Anything that they served on a tray for lunch, breakfast, dinner, they would just mix it all together in a bowl, put it in this bread basket or whatever, and put it in the oven, and that's what I had to eat. And so for 3 years, you know, they made me live like that because they felt like, you know, maybe that would make me, you know, get my life together.
So what was that like for you? Like, what day in, day out? Is that tormenting, or are you just like, fuck you, motherfucker?
Part of me was like, no matter what y'all do, you're not going to break me. For the most part, it didn't, because through a lot of it, I still was able to do the things that I was doing even when I was out in population. Even though I didn't supposed to have any contact with anybody, I had enough pull, enough sway throughout the prison system that, you know, I still had guards bringing me cell phones in. And then it was until one night I was sitting there and I was talking to my auntie on the phone, and my auntie was like, "You're going to get out here and die." She's like, "You're going to get out here and die because you feel that there's nothing or nobody that you have to look up to or answer to." She say, "But there's a higher power that at the end of the day that you're going to have to come to and answer for all the things and be judged for all the things that you've done and the things that you're doing." And so I can remember vividly, man, sitting in my cell. It's probably about a 6x8. Only thing I got is a concrete slab to sleep on because they've tried to do everything to break me. So I'm sleeping on this concrete slab, and the chaplain had brought a Bible in. And so I'm flipping through this Bible, and I'll get the Bible and I'll, say a little prayer like, "God, if you real, I'm open this up and you're going to talk to me."
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm opening this.
How's your chance to prove it, big fella?
Yeah. And I opened this Bible and he didn't talk to me, I was like, man, I wrote my auntie off. I was like, she ain't talking about nothing. So I end up, but I started praying. So one day the counselor came. She was like, she stuck her head in my door.
So, okay, hold up. Rewind. You started praying.
Yeah.
Explain, please.
Like, I just started praying. I just started praying.
That, like, God, make yourself real, or like what?
No, I just started praying like, basically, God, if you're real, show yourself to me, because I'm a more of a physical person. So somebody can tell
me. But you're also a powerful motherfucker at that point in time.
But at,
what made the inclination to start praying?
The passion and the power that my auntie talked to me with, it was just, I don't know, it was just overwhelming.
Like you heard her?
Like I did. Like it was overwhelming. And she was, because, and you would have to know her. The way she said what she said at the time that she said it, when It's a time where, you know, I'm sending all type of money home to her. You know, I can have anything I want in prison, you know, and she's like, you need to change your life or you're going to die, you know. And it made me think. And so she said, you need to start praying. So I started praying, you know, and
at that point, it was just kind of a God, make yourself real.
Yeah, or? I honestly thought it was BS because nothing happened. I didn't get any warm feelings or any fuzzy feelings. But out the blue, the counselor came to me and she came to my door. She said, hey, what prison you want to go to? Now, you have to understand that where I was at, it was almost Guantanamo Bay. This is horrible. This is probably the worst place you can be in. And she came to ask me what other prison I want to go to, even though I'm still in prison.
So that was a bona fide miracle?
Man, I'm going to get out of here and I'm going to go to prison.
God, you are real.
Yeah. And it wasn't even that I was saying God real. It was like I was just so happy. But what happened was they sent me to a prison called Branchville. This is a prison that's somebody like me should not have been in. It's almost a Christian-based facility. It's open territory, open dorm. I should not have been there.
And you're pretty much the baddest motherfucker in the system.
I should not have been there. Exactly. I should not have been there. When I got there, the warden, the captains and everybody that came and talked to me, they was like, you're not going to do that stuff here. And I'm thinking to myself, like, okay.
Right. Yeah, right.
You are.
Right.
And so I'm there though, and I'm in this program, and this guy named Chad Lamb, he came to me. He say, I'm in this class, and it's by Bruce Chen, I believe, Crazy Love. I'm doing this program, and so I got to go to this class to do this program to get a time cut to get out of prison earlier. So that's the only reason I'm doing this class. And so he came to me. He was like, hey, I want you to pray for the class. I looked at him last, say, dude, if I pray, nobody getting their prayers answered. You know, like,
that's a bad idea.
It ain't gonna happen, dude. And so he started pushing for me to go to this program that they have in prison called Kairos. It's a prison ministry where individuals come in and
At this point, are you starting to buy into this God stuff, or like, what are you? Are
no,
you
I'm
still
not trying
just,
to. I'm not.
This
trying,
is going
to
help not, me get out of here.
I'm not buying into the God stuff, but I want to get out of prison, and a part of me want to be a better person. So
tell me about that. When did that kick in? The part of you I want to be a better person. Does that go back to Auntie getting on you, or
it goes back to Auntie getting on to me, and then go back to me being at Branchville, because for my entire prison incarceration, I was behind a 40-foot wall. So only thing I can see is up. I couldn't see any cars, any people, really any devoid of any life other than, you know, the other people that I'm in prison with. But I go to Branchville and, you know, you see trees and animals and people. It's like, man, like, dude, the world still is out there. You know, this ain't the Walking Dead.
Maybe,
you know?
Destroying shit's not so great, huh?
And so he pushed the warden to make me go to Kairos. Because when they first came and asked me, they was like, we need you to go to Kairos. I was like, I'm not going to Kairos. I don't care about food, cookies. I don't care about none of that. And so I end up going to Kairos, and dude, it changed my life.
So there was a turning point there.
It changed my life.
Do you remember that turning point?
I can remember the exact point. I was at, I'm at Kairos, and they have this thing called the forgiveness ceremony. And, they ask you to, you know, they give you this piece of paper that'll disappear, and they ask you to write down everybody that you want to forgive or that you need forgiveness from, or people that you want to forgive you of any wrongdoings or any sins that you may have committed. And so I'm writing on this paper, and, you know, I write, you know, write names, and at the end, then I write my name, and you know, I just broke down in tears. And for the first time in, you know, almost 15, 20 years, I like shed real tears. It was so crazy. Like, we sitting there after this forgiveness ceremony, because I'm still broke up. I don't know how, I don't even really care about how anybody else is feeling, what anybody else is going through. I'm still broke up. They bring out, I'm in prison, and they bring out ice cream and chicken. And I'm sitting over the ice cream and chicken crying. So my table leader, he's like, he go get the pass. He's like, I don't know what's going on. This dude crying. We got ice cream and chicken. But dude, I was so torn up, and just like so overwhelmed that, you know, I just couldn't contain myself. And, you know, it was just like in that moment, you know, I really felt the hand of God, and it was just powerful, man. Just to be in that environment around individuals who truly loved you, just because they couldn't get anything from me, didn't want anything from me, you know. Here's men that
should be terrified of you, right?
Exactly. And who I've been trying to get out of prison for the last 20 years, but these guys voluntarily came, you know.
Come in it, yeah.
Yeah, like, dude, like, what's they're wrong with them?
They're fucking coming in.
Like, what is wrong with these guys?
But they shouldn't came. You be playing golf or something? Like,
and what? It was just a powerful, powerful experience, man. And I'm telling you, that changed my life, man. That made me to the man that I am today, and that's a fact.
So tell me about that change, because, like, that was a lot of violence, a lot of anger, a lot of...
Yeah, and it wasn't, I'm not going to say it was drastic. It wasn't overnight. You know, I still struggle. Like, right now to this day, I have a daughter that I had from prison. Had her while I was incarcerated. And that was after my Kairos. But it was, I can feel something different about me. You know, I knew that for a fact. I can tell that I wasn't the same person that I was. And it was even so much so that I went and told not only my gang, but the heads of every other gang that, you know, I was done. You know, I was
now
done.
That's not typically received well, is it?
No, it's supposed to be a death sentence. Yeah, supposed to be a death sentence. But I honestly believe that God puts us in certain situations for certain things, because I had a friend who
Why was it not a death sentence for you?
I personally believe it was because of God, because I had a friend who maybe 10 years prior, and he's been up here, Wayne has met him, named James Elsey. He was in the gang. He was in my gang. He came to me, and he wanted to give his life to God and didn't want to be in a gang no more. Everybody that was in the cell with us wanted to kill him on sight. But I told him, as long as he was true about what he wanted to do, that he can go and, you know, do his God thing. Because to me back then, it was a joke. But
we don't have to worry about that motherfucker anymore. He's going to
But giving him,
go bake cookies and stuff.
Giving him that pass, you know, enabled me to get the pass that, you know, God wanted and needed from me.
So what's life like for you now?
Life for me now is great. You know, like I'm married. I've been out of prison. 4 years now, married.
Tell me about the wife. How'd you guys meet? What's that story?
Oh, my wife, we met. So me and my wife, we've been knowing each other for maybe 15, almost 20 years now. So my wife is the niece of my best friend who's incarcerated. Me and him were incarcerated together. And the crazy story about how me and my wife met was, so I hadn't had a visit in prison probably about the 10 years. I was in there for 10 years, hadn't had a visit. But me and her uncle, we had been friends the whole time. He was a fellow gang member, and we were thick as thieves. And so he told me, it was his birthday. He was like, hey, man, I want you to come on a visit with me. for my birthday and meet my family. I'm like, dude, I ain't no charity case. I don't need to go up there and meet them people, you know? And so, and he had asked her the same thing to come up there and just to hang out, just because he wanted, you know, I was basically family. He wanted all his family together. He told her to come up there and to hang out. She's like, I ain't going up there and meet no dirty, dusty dude named Dontell, you know? And so we both end up relinquishing and, you know, giving in to him. And so, and we went up there, and man, sparks flew, and we stayed friends for 15.
Love at first sight kind of thing.
We were friends, you know. Okay, we were so friends. We but we talked the whole entire the rest of my incarceration from that point. There was not a time I couldn't call her. We didn't write each other. She didn't come see me, and we were best. So we've been best friends. We was best friends for about 15 years, and you know, I got out, and she came to see me, and you know, we ended up getting married, man. And she's probably one of the better things that happened to me, because she most definitely keep me grounded. I'll tell you that.
That's great,
dude. So where'd all that anger go?
Dude, I have no idea. I mean, there's not to say that, you know, there's still not a part of, you know, the old man inside, but you know, God tells us that the old man is dead, you know, and a new man is risen. And I believe that firmly. You know, there's not a person that you can meet that may have ran across me or know me today and would tell you anything different. You know,
it's hard for me to put all this together in my mind, dude.
I know it's crazy, ain't it? But God works in mysterious ways.
It's maybe it's crazy, but it's really fucking important.
Yeah.
I mean, when you think about the changes that people are trying to make and whatever, like, oh, my God. And it, I mean, dude, I'm fucking speechless, and I am never speechless.
Yeah. I can back that up. He's always got something to say.
I fucking love to hear myself talk. Yeah. I'm like,
so,
man, go ahead.
Where would you find the role models or what we referred to earlier as the normal life, because you had never seen that.
Right.
So God got a hold of you and changed the inside, but.
Yeah, so the next step was to.
You guys are challenging my atheism here, yeah, man. I'm like, so I'm having a come to Jesus moment.
Yes, as you should. So there was a time where, you know, the only people I hung out with were people who I felt comfortable with, people who I felt were like me, you know, people who I felt knew my struggle. But if today, if you look at my Rolodex, it'll be, those people won't be, like, there's no way that in, you know, in my early days that I would have hung out with Wayne.
Right.
You know, we have two different ways of thinking, or had two different ways of thinking, mm-hmm. and we live two different lifestyles. Mm-hmm. But now, you know, men of faith, men of character, Those are people that I gravitate towards.
Yeah.
You know, those are people that God chose to put in my life, and he chose to put those men in my life for a reason, because God had a higher purpose for me. You know, now I serve as a youth pastor for the YCC. This is troubled teens.
Oh, shit, that's fucking awesome.
Kids who are going through the same things that I went through as a kid.
But not even close, because you've got so much more credibility.
Right, but who better to talk to these kids than somebody who know exactly where they're at?
That's awesome.
You know, and I believe, you know, God does everything for a purpose. You know, he put each and every one of us in someone's lives for a reason. You know, some people we learn from, some people we learn what not to do from. And it's up to us to figure that out. And God has put people in my life that I can count on and trust, and it's been an amazing thing.
Yeah, wow, that's great. So you might not have had a clear picture to start out with, but as these men come into your life, you could see, oh, that's a better way to think and direct.
Right, and it is, because and what's so crazy, so like right now, I have men that I call on. Wayne is one, Brian Jennings is another, Jim Stauber, and Gene Bacchus. Each one of these men.
Gene Bacchus?
Yeah.
That's my eighth grade football coach. Shout out to Gene.
That's one of my best friends. We have lunch at least once a month.
Tell Gene I said hi. Yeah. Tell him my football career petered out.
Yeah, and so each one of these men hold a different section in life, mm-hmm. you know, and they hold a different section in my life. You know, I get different advice from each one of them, and I'm humble enough now to know that I need that advice versus yeah. back then I was the shot caller. I knew everything.
Right, right.
Now I know, like, I can't, not to say I can't, but God put these men in my life for a reason. So, hey, what you think about this? Mm-hmm. And I don't have a problem calling, you know, saying, I may need some help on this. I may need some advice on this. What do you think about this? Mm-hmm. And I have not once been turned down,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
and it's not that, you know, I call and say, hey, I need some money. Hey, right, I need right. you to come take me here. No, it's, if nothing else is, you know, what do you think? What kind of advice can you give me? Or what position you can put me in so I can earn whatever I need?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And that's I'm extremely thankful
yeah.
for that.
And there's probably some accountability there so you don't get outside of boundaries that are set for yourself because you know these men will speak to you about
they
it.
They will speak to me about it. Yeah. And that's why I say each person is different. Like with Gene and Brian, they're more stern, uh-huh. you know. Uh-huh. And, you know, we sometimes as men, we have heated conversations, but at the end of the day, you know, it's always respect and it's always love because I know that God placed these individuals in my life for a reason.
Yeah, that's great.
So what's it like to be so jacked? Like, you're just fucking ripped, man. Like,
I don't know. I don't even.
Have you always been this way? You're a fucking beast, dude.
But I know somebody that's bigger than me. I got a friend, Boy Blaylock. He's bigger than me. So there's always somebody bigger than you. So you just got to stay humble in your own parts.
Yeah.
Dude. If I'm ever that fucking jacked, I'm shirtless 24/7, 365, man. I don't care. 10 below zero. I don't give a shit. I ain't putting a shirt on. So, okay, you got to come back. Like, can we make you do that?
On the podcast, he means.
Okay, yeah.
He was like, I don't know.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind coming back. I wouldn't mind come hanging out with you guys. Yeah.
And the fascinating thing is what intrigues me so much. I mean, there's so many things about your story that are so intriguing. But, you know, I look at it more clinically, you know, from a therapeutic perspective. But the thing that I would want to kind of pick your brain about is to have as much power as you had. And to be able to give up that power is a very unnatural thing.
Exactly.
And, you know, it's just, you know, the old saying, like, absolute power corrupts absolutely. But it's like you were in a profound position of power, and it would be incredible to just kind of really dissect relinquishing that, right? Because it's a lot of fucking power.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, you seem like you're fucking... You're so goddamn nice and happy. Like,
I mean, I'm pretty sure.
And I've been in rooms. I've been
then.
In rooms with sociopaths before, and that ain't your vibe, man. Yeah. You're just like, I want to hang out with this guy. It's not like I'm scared he's gonna like cut my heart out. Like that, you just are. One of the most remarkable people I have ever met in my life. Yeah, I mean, wow.
Yeah, it's great.
No, we appreciate you, like, yeah. giving the time and telling your story. And God damn, we'd love to have you back.
Yeah. I mean, anytime you guys call, man, I answer the bell.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your story. Anybody out there, this is the guy you want to talk to. If you're struggling and you're trying to get from one place to another, fuck me, man. Like, forget about me. Call Dontel or call me because I got his cell phone number and I can hook you up for a fee. I mean, there's got to be something in it for me. But just a radical story of transformation that just... I don't have a clinical explanation for it, dude.
And the crazy thing about it is it's true.
Yeah, that's right.
That's the best part, man.
It's true.
Buddy, again, thank you. Like, I can't say thank you enough for your time, for your story. We will make you come back. And Merry Christmas to you. Hope you have a wonderful holiday season. Go out there and spread some fucking Christmas cheer, okay?
Merry Christmas.
Get out there. Merry Christmas, and we'll talk to you next time.
All right, you guys have a good one.